Mr. Hunter, Reel 5, you were telling me about the driver that you'd taken over from in the quartermaster's thing. You said his name was Frank McLaughlin.
Frank McLaughlin, and he had adopted.
What was he like, Frank?
Oh, he was a cheery guy, you know. Actually, him and I, when we first called up, were in the town hall in Leicester, you know. And I remember lying on the floor and he said to me, God, this is what we deserve to get this. Lying on the floor, we're still from the meeting, you know. However, getting away from that, he was a tank driver and he was not doing 7 days. How he got with that tank, I don't know. One of the things in the Con sector, he had he didn't command some of his troops, like, you know, and got them back to safety again. But getting away from that, he got wounded again, and in Germany, and he was very evacuated. I never seen him until after he came back.
Now, what's the next thing you remember then? Is it this advance to Lübeck?
Lübeck, that's right. Aye, that's right. The troops went up to Lübeck, and then we sort of arrived by it. And I think the infantry and that took all the prisoners that were coming down. And then we were sent up to a place called, I think it was Flensburg. That was on the Danish and German border, like, you know. But we...
Now, where were you when the war ended? Or VE Day?
We were never seen a place called Dredstedt. It was up from a place called Husum. Husum was a great...
Was that after Flensburg, then?
That was before Flensburg.
Right. So you moved to Dredstedt. And what do you remember of VE Day?
Well, I think civil officers went... They went to... I mean, that scare, and then they were riding round in jeeps and so forth, and they were clear that it was all over, you know.
Were they drunk?
No, well, I had one or two talks, you know.
But were the officers drunk?
Oh, no. They were pretty sober, and they had to watch yourself, you know.
So they were just being wild.
That's right. They were
somebody's supposed to have shot up Grant's caravan. Did you hear about that or know about that?
I don't know.
How did you feel at VE Day? I mean,
well, it was a grand feeling. It was a better day than the EGI day when you were only going to transport it to the Japanese world.
Well, tell me what happened after VE Day. You were at Dredstedt then, were you?
Dredstedt, that's right.
And then what happened then?
Well, we stayed there for about a year.
So you weren't one of the ones who was transferred to the first?
No. The first regiment was broken up and they were transferred to us. They were disbanded, first regiment. And all the guys got transferred. Well, most of the guys got transferred to us, the second regiment. And then when the VED came, they decided that they'd disband the whole lot, you know. And I got the... It was Harry Melville and Johnny Walker and I, and we had somebody, a chap called Chick Reed from Dundee. We were posted to the Mills of Government in Dusseldorf.
Now, when was that?
That was after the war finished. After that, we were there in Andreasen for about a year. And then this happened, this demobilisation thing.
So you were in Dredstedt from May 45 to May 46?
No, May 45 until, let me see now. That's right, a year and 44 years, that's right.
And what were you doing while you were there?
Oh, well, sort of recuperating, you know, and... We weren't doing any training at that particular time because our bank was all finished and the guys were playing football and swimming things and that, you know. And you weren't allowed to fraternise at that particular time. And then normally took the fraternisation thing off and you got to, you know, mingle with the Germans and get their point of view of what was going on, you know.
And how did you get on with the German civilians?
Well, they gave the impression that they never knew anything about Belsen, you know. But maybe they did. Maybe we would have been in the same position yourself, I think.
And what did you think of them?
They were something all right, something a wee bit arrogant, you know.
How did you treat them?
I just treat them the same as anybody else. And just spoke to them like that, you know. I thought we got very friendly with some of the youth, you know, the SS youth. Actually, they were serving in their canteen. And we got talking to them and that, you know, getting their point of view of what had happened and that, where they came from. And
And they actually worked in your canteen?
Yeah, they were in the canteen.
And what was their attitude to you?
They were glad because they were getting fed. They were getting fed off the, you know, off the British rations.
Well, and what did you think of them? Because the SS youth had a bad reputation, didn't they?
Well, they did that. They fought to us, but I think they've seen the light, I think, and was it one or two of the lads was quite good. And was another one. The Wehrmacht, they were different from the SS altogether. This guy, he was a late gentleman, you know. And I could always remember, we're always standing in this queue to go for breakfast in the morning. And this big German officer came down and he walked to the front of the queue. And of course, he got the thumbs down and told him to get right to the very end. He wasn't very pleased about it because he hadn't been an officer. That was one instant I noticed.
What about this trip to Four, the island?
Well, that was quite good. We went up a weekend trip to Four. We went up with lorries and that, you know.
What was that like?
That was quite
That's an island, isn't it? Auckland.
I got fed in the. I was a hard day, like. Well, the British rations like that. It was quite good, and it sort of recuperated from what was going to went through, like, you know. But, I mean, the people on that island were quite good too. You spoke to them, and there were no way. Didn't think about it at all. And that was it.
Now, the next thing was you said you were posted to the military government. When was that then?
That was a bit either January or March, I think.
So, around about January?
That's right. And that Chick Reed and Johnny Walker, they were with us. And a strange thing happened when we got to Dusseldorf. They were having a wee bit of trouble with the Germans. And they sent us up with the cars from Osnabrück. And I said, oh, God, it's not on this check. You know, I thought they were going to get another up. He will, you know. Whoever went up and got them in. I always remember that day. The roads were like ice and they were sliding from one side to the other. But we got back on the way back. There was nothing materialised as far as
what sort of trouble was there?
It was, I think they were trying to sort of be ambushed. They never got around to it, but I think they were trying to build up a, you know, an army of their own and trying to get the place people and that.
Now, what were you doing for the military government at Dusseldorf?
Well, what I was doing, I was on I was just driving the 1508 and supplying the different places, like, you know, British troops like.
Were you looking forward to demobilisation? You seem to have been in a long time.
Well, that was practically 6 years ago then.
I mean, did you ever think of staying in, or were you dying for it?
No. I mean, the officers coming back and said, would you not like to stay on the Norse government? I says, no, thank you. I says, get me on that next boat from Cully. Water down the car, in the wood, went by train down the car.
And when were you demobilised?
Yeah, I think it was in April, I think.
April 1946.
Yeah, that's right.
And what happened when you were demobilised? How did they actually do it?
Well, they took us to Edinburgh to Lethal Barracks. And we were supplied it with the civilian clothes.
What did you think of your demob suit?
George Roth suits and a George Roth hat, I'll tell you.
No good.
No. However, it served the purpose. And then I met one of the tank crews, a chap called Bill Warden, and the both of us went home together, you know, to Kirkcaldy.
And what were you going to do when now you came out of the army? I mean, you'd had your time, you were a French polisher, you know.
That's right. Well,
I mean, was there any problem in getting back into work after
the
war?
No, because you said there's 10 years as polishers.
And was there the work to do as a French polisher?
Well, the work, the father was quite busy. He was a foreman for the Matthew Spears and Company. And that went on for a while, so about 1952, and the family went defunct, you know. And I decided I'd go back to McIntosh to get a job there. So, whether Sandy McIntosh had heard about me from one of the old Yeomanry boys for the First World War, and I got stuck at the other way. And then this manager says to me, he says, "What about your father?" Well, I says, "Well, he's still there yet," but I says, "He's got a job lined up in the place called Harding. There's a polisher, French polisher, coffins and shop fitting and everything." So he went there for about, I would say, about 2 months. And this manager in McIntosh, Jock Mickey, they called him, he asked me, he says, "Where's your father?" The horses in that man. "Tell him to come back here." So he came back. But it wasn't his cup of tea, it was all mass production, you know, trying to speed things up, away from the old hand polishing and that.
But you carried on there. So you didn't, did the war have any physical or mental effects on you, good or bad, would you say?
Well, one of the physical effects is my tinnitus, which I applied for a pension. About 1991, I think it was, and I got a gratuity. It was £3,250, and they said that to apply again for a review of your pension. But the time I did that, they must have got wise to this and changed the whole structure altogether.
What do you think of your war service had caused the tinnitus?
Well, the noise, you know, but they don't seem to think that. They seem to think that that after you're away from that noise, it doesn't affect you. But as I told your MP, Mr. Mooney, they called him, he's still not got it yet. I says, "Yeah, this is with you all the time. You're lying in your bed and you're listening to this. It's like the waves coming in, you know." But according to Blackpool, they say that you were away. You got your pension and that was it. After that thing was stopped, you had no claim against them. But I keep plugging away, but it's keeping me going.
And did you join the Regimental Association after the war?
Yes, I was one of the first persons in there, and it was old guys from the First World War. Actually, the guy was Mitch Goodall, they called him, and he was from the First World War, and he had been the secretary, you know. Anyway, he was a hell of a nice chap. And Alistair Nairn, he was the chairman at that particular time. And quite a lot of chaps from the first regiment and the second regiment joined them. And I was there until, let me see there, I was 49 years there with the association. I never missed a dinner. All I done was I was going, you know. and Kilkenny and Cooper, and I never went to one in Dundee. I don't know why, but I never got that far as going up that way, you know. But,
are you still in them now?
Still, I'm going to another one there. 20th of November. John Dunley, that was the one you interviewed. John Dunley, do you remember? He's the secretary of the Fighting Pocket Association.
Is it still important to you, the Regiment Association?
Oh, I mean, you're meeting all the old chaps. You don't meet a lot of them, but you meet